Hello and welcome to Inside Education. We're online at insideed.com. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. Coming up on this week's programme.
If you look at children, the attitude that they have in terms of learning about the world, they're completely fascinated by it. They want to learn. They're full of awe by the smallest thing in the world. So in one way, our job is just not to destroy that.
Professor Aostra Johnson from Vermont in the United States discusses the relationship between spirituality and education. But first, as always, we go to Barry Hennessy for this week's education news. You're welcome, Barry.
Hello again, Sean. The country's largest second-level teachers' union, the ASTI, this week said there was no room for further cuts in education, as an OECD report showed investment in education here coming in 19th out of 31 countries. The study entitled Education at a Glance 2011 actually uses 2008 figures and so fails to take account of the significant cuts that have taken place since then. The teaching unions were quick out of the traps to point out that the figures were out of date, particularly in regard to teachers' pay. Irish teachers are the second best paid in the OECD, according to the study. However, the ASTI's General Secretary, Pat King, pointed out that teachers' salaries have fallen by an average of 14% since 2008, with further cuts for new entrants joining the profession from this autumn. Across the OECD, the average number of teaching hours at second level is 679, whereas in Ireland, it's 738. There's some good news in the study too, with the overall second level retention rate in Ireland at 91% compared to the OECD average of 82%. The TUI's reaction to the out-of-date figures in the OECD study was pretty caustic. The union's president, Bernie Ruan, said the report was beyond historic and that its data was of archaeological relevance. The Minister of State for Research and Innovation, Sean Sherlock, this week announced details of a training programme to ensure that all those teaching maths in post-primary schools have a maths qualification. Now, we're probably being a tad pedantic, but here at Inside Education, we often wonder about politicians and their spin doctors who use the expression unqualified teachers. Would we call an imposter working in a hospital an unqualified doctor, or someone who chanced their arm in the courts an unqualified solicitor or barrister? At any rate, the new training programme for people who teach maths follows on from the release by the Teaching Council of figures showing that of 2,045 people teaching maths in 245 schools, 1,400 were fully qualified, 596 had some studies in maths, and only 49 were completely unqualified in the subject. The Department of Education and Skills is drawing up a tender process to select providers to deliver the programme, which will combine online learning with lectures offered on a regional basis. A particular focus of the training, apart from improving teachers' mathematical knowledge, will be to help them develop strategies best suited to teaching project maths. Minister Sherlock pointed out that an earlier study showed that few, if any, people not fully qualified in maths are teaching the subject at final year, leaving cert higher level. Speaking of exams, about 57,000 students nationwide received their junior cert results this week, and there was the usual focus on attainment in subject areas like maths and science. The positive impact of Project Maths can be seen in a modest increase in A and B grades in higher level maths. The number of students failing higher level also declined slightly, but it was practically stable at ordinary and foundation level. There was a marked increase in the number of students taking science at higher level, up 3,000 from last year. Most of those who took a shot at the higher level paper appear to have scored D's and some C's, as the proportion of those grades awarded went up. There was a small decline in the number of A's awarded and a 4% decline in B grades. Overall, French appears to have had the highest failure rate of the mainstream subjects. 5.6% of candidates failed the higher level paper, along with an eye-watering 11.6% of ordinary level students. And finally, on last week's programme, we told you about the trip to Malaysia and Singapore being undertaken by the Junior Education Minister, Kieron Cannon. One of the items on Minister Cannon's Malaysian agenda was to represent the Irish government at the installation of the Chancellor of the new Perdana University in Kuala Lumpur, where the undergraduate medical degree will be offered by the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland. We were a little interested as to why the Irish government press releases on the visit failed to mention the name of the university chancellor in question. given that press releases on foreign trips usually miss no opportunity to name drop the foreign dignitaries to be met. So we decided to do a little digging. Well, the aforementioned Chancellor is none other than the former Malaysian Prime Minister, Dr. Mahathir Mohamad. This, along with the fact that Dr. Mohamad is himself a qualified doctor, would surely merit him a place on the press release, right? Well, maybe. Mahathir Mohamad was Malaysia's longest-serving Prime Minister, staying in the job for 22 years until 2003. During his rule, he clamped down on the independence of Malaysia's judiciary and initiated a crackdown on internal dissent through the use of the Internal Security Act. A number of administrators who didn't speak Chinese were appointed to Chinese schools in the country, provoking a huge outcry among the Chinese minority and leading to the detention of 10 MPs from an opposition party largely supported by Malaysian Chinese. And that is this week's Education News, Sean.
Thanks for that, Barry. And Barry Hennessy will, of course, be back with more education news at the same time next week. You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Podcasts of previous programmes can be downloaded from iTunes or from our website, insideed.com. In Ireland, there has traditionally been a strong link between religion and schools, though this may be changing. Perhaps we have given less thought, though, to how spirituality can shape what happens in education. One person who has given a lot of thought to this topic in the United States is Professor Eostre Johnson. Eostre Johnson is a professor of education at St. Michael's College, Colchester, Vermont. She is coordinator of a spirituality in education program there, and she has published many articles in the areas of creativity, multiple intelligences, and spirituality, and how they relate to human development and education. She was in Ireland this week to speak to educators at the Merino Institute of Education. I met up with her prior to her talk, and I began by asking her what she was going to say to the Irish teachers when she met them.
The subtitle of the talk is it's the voice of a child in a multicultural, multi-religious and secular society. So it's about the shift that's going on in the way we have to think and teach about diversity. And in that context, how do we define spirituality? What is spirituality in that context? Is there a way that we can think about it that does apply to everyone, to secular children, to children from all religious faiths and traditions? And just what does spirituality mean in that context in terms of the development and education of children?
So what then would be a spiritual response to the fact of having such diverse students in classrooms today?
Well, the first thing you have to talk about is teaching religious diversity. So teaching the basic ideas of all faith traditions. Now, it's very different in the US than in Ireland, because you have already have religion as a subject in your curriculum. And I understand that in most schools you've already been dealing with thinking more about teaching a multi-faith curriculum. In the US, it's new. We haven't had religion as a subject. We won't have religion as a subject in most public schools. Some high schools might. Certainly private schools might. But in terms of public education, even just moving religious diversity and how it impacts society into history and social studies is a relatively new thing. So history textbooks are being revised with that in mind. We're such a pluralistic culture now, even in a state like Vermont, where I come from, which is a very small state in the north, one of the quote-unquote whitest states traditionally in the nation, and we have immigrants from all over the world. In my local public school, there's 20 languages or more spoken. And how do you understand children from different countries and cultures without understanding the religious traditions? Even if the children themselves are not extremely religious, their families don't practice, their cultures were still shaped by those traditions. So I think that's one of the reasons there's growing interest in the religious aspect of spirituality. Now, there are many other aspects to the definition of spirituality, but there's a context which has to do with religious diversity.
And it seems to me that you're deliberately using the word spirituality as opposed to religious. Where do you see the boundaries between those two phenomena, which are often can be confusing?
Right. There is no hard and fast separation. I think it's kind of a continuum. For some people, there is. There, if you think of spirituality as a search for meaning, as a search for transcendence, as a search for connectedness, then that search certainly has been contained and some answers provided within various religious traditions. But it certainly goes beyond the bounds of any one religious tradition.
This evening, then, the main message that you have for Irish teachers is what?
The main thing that I'm talking about is a study that I did for many years, and I got interested about 20 years ago when people in the U.S. in education, various levels, were starting to use the word spirituality in the context of education. It certainly wasn't being taught openly or talked about openly in public schools, but I think because many people were on their own spiritual journeys, it was very popular to be looking for a spiritual meaning and source that started, you know, for the last certain decades. And so as they began to talk about spirituality in education, I just didn't know what they meant. Spirituality has so many definitions that I wanted to know what do you mean when you say spirituality? So it was a study that included interviews with teachers who used that word. It included over 1,000 surveys asking people what they mean by spirituality in general and in relationship to education. And then also looking at the really burgeoning literature in the field of spirituality and education to see what meanings people had when they talked about it. And out of that, I through a kind of a thematic analysis, I came up with various categories that other words you could use to describe people's views of what spirituality actually means, and then how you would relate it to children and bring it into curriculum.
So what kind of categories did you find that people, that you classified how people use spirituality in relation to teaching and education?
So meaning-making, self-reflection, faith, emotion, ethics, creativity, ecology. I think I got them all. I didn't keep track.
So these would be kind of the belief systems or the value systems that were underlying the teacher's interpretation of spirituality. Is that right?
Yes. Both the teachers in my study and also the literature, which was being written by and for teachers, largely by professors. So, you know, there were many people who had definitions that cut across a number of categories, whereas some people would anchor their definition of spirituality in a particular category. And some people might even refer to all of those categories. Oh, I'm sorry, the one that I forgot, which is the most interesting, perhaps at this particular moment, is contemplative. So that's kind of, I would call it the area of emerging interest right now. There were other words. I used contemplative. Some people used mystical. But now in the United States, and I understand here in Ireland too, there is a lot of interest in the idea of meditating with children. In the United States, it's often contextualized as stress reduction. Mindfulness is another major word that's being used, and it's part of the definition of contemplative. There are various aspects of what contemplative means. So a large variety of curriculums are just now sort of coming into play in various public systems, and they don't usually call them contemplative, sometimes they call them mindful, sometimes they call them emotional resilience, sometimes they call them stress reduction curriculums.
So these are curriculums, these would be curriculums for teaching different subjects, but they would have these spiritual undertones, is that it?
Well, the particular ones that I'm talking about now would be for helping kids do practices that would you could call contemplative, although you know they many of them don't have a lot of depth to them, but you could call them contemplative. So they would be practices for calming students, for centering students, and you know some of them have kind of deep psychological, theological, religious cores to them, even though they might be aimed at different faith traditions. Others are more superficial. So they're not usually taught. It's very helter-skelter, depending on who got interested in what school district, a teacher, maybe an administrator, so that there's whole schools that are using particular curriculums. I know in the Chicago area, there's one particular curriculum called the Calm Classroom that's being used in a number of Chicago public schools. There's other, you know, so it just depends on where you are, but they do have certain common elements. So in many cases, they're, I think, just a response to the cultural issues of our day, the over-technologicalization of children and culture, the hurried child, the kind of scattered lives that we're living. So children are not able to focus and concentrate their attention as well as they used to.
And to what extent do you think that it is a search for values that can give meaning to the whole process of education?
Well, I think that some of it is. And in fact, there's another aspect that is probably primary to this, which is working with teachers themselves. So the idea, many people say, and I agree, that you need to start with the spiritual life of teachers. And so there are a number of retreat processes. One of them is called Courage to Teach, and there are others that would ask teachers to go off for a weekend or a week or even a day to take time to calm and settle and really think about what is most meaningful to them about their lives, about their teaching, and how to convey that to children. So I do think that some of these curriculums, the way they're used with children, and this is what I would be promoting, are looking at not just superficial aspects of the contemplative, but at all these different areas, and just looking at what makes a well-rounded, well-balanced child that it has the tools to really search for the meaning of existence and the meaning of their life and to find viable answers.
And I suppose one of the questions that's in the back of my mind all the time is if we're talking about doctors, say, or engineers or architects, other people who don't, who do professional work like teachers, we don't necessarily think about their spiritual lives. Why is it important to think about the spiritual lives of teachers?
Okay, well, first of all, I want to actually, it may not be as common to think about that, but I can tell you that this kind of approach to deepening meaning-making is coming into medical schools, so that there are definitely curriculums that are in some medical schools that are helping doctors on their journey to look more deeply for the meaning of their profession, to be able to relate more empathetically with their patients, and to think about what spirituality means within their profession. And then I've seen several, surprisingly, retreats lately that have been called mindfulness and lawyers. So it is actually not just limited to the world of teachers. But it I think it's particularly important for teachers because they are forming our youth. I mean, this is the future that we're talking about. And in many ways, I think I'm fearful for a whole generation of children, that what the stresses in contemporary culture are both directly and indirectly stresses for children. Adults are stressed by the economic conditions, the uncertainty, climate change, rapidly moving paces and so on. And so the stresses get passed on to the kids, and then the kids have the same influences. So there's a lot of evidence that there's more diagnoses of psychological problems, the less proficiency, I'd say, with social skills, certainly more ADHD diagnoses, and I think a lot of it is very cultural.
We are concerned in Ireland at the moment. In the last PISA test, we didn't do very well in literacy and numeracy, and the new Minister for Education and Skills has put a lot of priority on promoting literacy and numeracy. And that seems to be getting a lot of support from educators and the wider community. I'm wondering then, given the demands to improve performance of children and of learners in maths and science and reading literacy, is it harder to make the case for a focus on spirituality in education?
Well, it depends on how you define spirituality. And I'm not a reading or a math specialist, but I certainly know enough about various methods of teaching reading and math to give at least some kind of an answer. So if you, for example, focus on the whole idea of meaning making, and continually asking the question, what is our goal in literacy? What is our goal in math? And then it can change how it's taught. So I can't speak really for Ireland, but, thinking about the United States, and just take an example, the different methods that are used in teaching reading, some are much more skills-based, and skills are extremely important, but right now we're gearing everything towards showing yearly progress in reading. So we don't know yet if a very, very pragmatic skills-based curriculum that helps kids raise their test scores is going to, in the long run, produce adults who are highly literate and who really want to read and have an aptitude and interest in reading. So if you think of the category of meaning making, if that's what we're interested in, both literacy and numeracy as a tool, not just for career success, but for meaning making in the world, then it is related. And I could use some of those other categories too. If you think about the whole idea of children's literature being just this is where we learn about other human beings. We learn about ethical dilemmas that people go through. We learn about emotional literacy through literature. And so if those are your goals, and children are deeply interested in books and in reading, then I think it does become part of the spiritual quest. And I don't mean to separate those, because I think that no matter what education system we have, one of the top goals is producing highly literate students. It's just a matter of sort of thinking about how we're doing it and placing it somewhere in a continuum or a system in terms of the reasons for it.
And spirituality, is that something that can be developed? And if so, how? Among children in particular, I'm thinking.
So one interesting question is, in terms of spirituality, is do we come with it or do we develop it? And there's kind of been two competing theories. One of them is that we're blank slates and well, there, you know, there's also the perspective that we come as less than a blank slate, that we come as sinful, although that one isn't as dominant as it used to be. But, you know, that we really don't have much to begin with and we need to develop it all. Then there's the almost opposite perspective, which is very much in the romantic tradition, the Wordsworthian tradition of we come as very spiritual beings and we need to look to the child in terms of to show us the way back to our spirituality. And I think that some of each is true. The latest research in cognitive psychology is certainly pointing to the fact that children are much, much more developed in many of the areas that I'm talking about in terms of empathy and ethics and mathematical thinking and just scientific reasoning, that we come equipped to do that. And or if you look at children, the attitude that they have in terms of learning about the world, they're completely fascinated by it. They want to learn. They're full of awe by the smallest thing in the world. So in one way, our job is just not to destroy that, to keep it going. But there are other ways in which it completely needs to be nurtured and developed. I don't think that you can say that there's one unified spiritual theory of development, although there are people that have tried to do that. But I think there are different developmental continuums depending on which definition of spirituality that you're talking about.
And that was Aostra Johnson from St. Michael's College, Vermont. That's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programs on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email us at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to my guest this week, Professor Aostra Johnson, and to Barry Hennessy for the education news. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.